small above the mark. And so I just kind of want an update on that, how the money's being spent, if we're kind of moving in that direction. So floor is yours. Whoever wants to talk about the budget units, kind of show us where the money's at.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, if I could just, again, put some context around this. Before I came into office over a year ago, actually it was during the transition, and the superintendent who I visited has no clue that I'm going to pick on him right now, but I visited Superintendent Gull from Mountain View.
Lyman.
This is wonderful way to start, from Lyman, and we were talking about
not consolidated, right?
No, that's clever, Mr. Chairman. I visited him last December, actually, to judge We the People, and we got to talking about school improvement, and he noted that they had a district coach that was assigned to them by the WDE as part of our state system of support. And he mentioned to me, what we really need to do is have some help with strategic planning. And I heard that a coach over on the other side of the state or in another district is really good at that, but the coach that we have, that's not necessarily their skill set. So the whole drive home, I thought a lot about that, and I thought, you know, we have this top-down approach to state system of support where we have these contracts out for district coaches to go in and help struggling schools or help struggling school districts, and it's entirely incumbent or dependent on the skill set of the district coach. So we let all of those coaching contracts expire, knowing that we wanted to turn that model completely upside down, and instead of it being a top-down WDE, we're here to help you, here's what to do approach, really have the school districts begin to identify, first of all, they know we have every school district, every school in the state that wants to be the best, but sometimes they don't have the skills or the expertise or the resources to do that. So trying to accommodate those shortfalls and then really infuse our entire school system in Wyoming with the expertise and the resources necessary to bring the lowest performing schools up and keep the highest performing schools high, and also share expertise from the highest to the lowest and everywhere in between. So that's really the marching orders that I gave to our staff that then went to the State Board of Education. We partnered with the Wyoming superintendents. We partnered with the University of Wyoming and the State Board in particular, and put together the crux, the foundation for an effective state system of support that is very grassroots. It's oriented in sharing best practices. It's oriented in continually evaluating the performance of our low and high performing schools so that they can learn from each other and leverage each other. And right now that foundation looks like this. We have partnered with the Superintendents Association to provide professional development to every school staff member identified, down to the classroom teacher level, and it's around the professional learning communities, basically a data-driven school culture. And it's not a strategy, it's not a practice, it's not a book, it's a school culture that is really steeped around having collaborative relationships within a school, within a district, and using your data to make the most important decisions about education. We also partnered with the University of Wyoming to deliver the ECHO model, which is, and we can go into more detail, but essentially it is a proven model in the medical world, in the healthcare world, whereby we can share best practices from high-performing doctors, or in this case, high-performing schools and high-performing leaders, with middle of the road and our lowest-performing schools and leaders, and again, leverage that expertise. That's all virtual. We started that in December, and on a weekly basis, we have anywhere from 60 to 100 participants statewide on that ECHO on that ECHO model. And then we also instituted or have a collaborative council comprised of about 30 folks from across stakeholder groups in education that are informing this process. And then again, we're looking at our own data to make sure we're not just doing what feels right, but we're doing what's really making a difference. So that is the crux of the model. And I think I would like Brent to just talk a little bit about how we're funding that and why the continuing the continuing funding and growth of the state system of support, which is our single biggest initiative in education right now, why that is so vital.
Mr. Chairman, Brent Young, Wyoming Department of Education, Chief Policy Officer, and want to add, as well as some of the funding tied to the system of support, just a couple more components as well. One piece is an evaluation model. So we have a system getting in place and operating out there with various strategies. We know we want to make sure that those are effective. And so part of the work and part of the contract we've been working with is through Education Northwest, who is very familiar with system of supports throughout the country. And we've done some work with them to develop an evaluation model. We expect to have to continue that work with in some way contracting around evaluation. And so as folks participate in some of these strategies and activities, we have an entity going out there and doing focus groups with folks. And really the base of it is, you know, we have the outcomes that we want. We know that our final result is student achievement eventually down the road, but there's a lot of intermediate steps that we need to make sure we're looking at and evaluating and making sure we're making good use of our funding. And those are those types of things that adults need to do. So the evaluation model is not only going to look at that final outcome of student performance, but it's going to look at those intermediate things like, are adults changing their behavior so student achievement can improve, you know, based upon what they've done in the past. So some of that funding is going to be used for an evaluation model. And then one other activity that I'd like to add, including to what Superintendent Balow shared with you, is some of the data investigation with our lowest performing schools that we'll start doing this summer, bringing together those school leadership teams that write their school improvement plans and develop the strategies around that. We'll be spending 2 days with each of those schools going through a root cause analysis, and then from that, using the WAEA model around the representative piece, helping those schools determine what some of those practices are. So that just wanted to add that as an additional piece. Funding for this is all funding that comes from set-asides or funding that you made possible for not only just WAEA Phase 1 and Phase 2 work, but in some of your past work, you've said specifically for system of support, here's the funding that you can use for that. And in many cases, those are combined. And so what you had asked us to use for Phase 1, Phase 2 continued work is also some of the same funding sources that you've asked for system of support. And I'll start with the largest, I believe, of those, and that is the funding source 4602. It's the Education Testing and Assessment Budget, referred to as ETA. That was one where it's earmarked for both the Phase 1 and Phase 2 work, as well as system of support work. And so I can tell you that what I just explained about the evaluation model and the future work for evaluation of the various strategies of the system of support will be used. We'll use this ETA funding. It does go dead in June of 2016, so we want to make sure we can spend that down. We believe there's about $330,000 left in that fund currently, and so we'll want to use that for any activities that we can moving forward. There's a portion of that contract that has been used to establish a contract with an individual who is working with the board to develop a strategic plan and implementation guide for the system of support. This is also the individual that's working with that collaborative council of Wyoming stakeholders providing strategic direction.
What is that? Could you tell us that unit again, the division and units that's in?
4602.
Is that in 205 or the new
205.
206? Oh, okay, I'm looking at 206. So how does that shake out in 206? What number is it?
Yeah, it's a different, the same thing.
We're looking at, I'm looking at 206.
Only 205, Mr. Chairman.
So that, as that goes away.
Mr. Chairman.
Have a question?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I'm confused because you're saying 4602. Has that now been reorganized? Because all we're seeing in the budget right now is a 4601 and a 4606, or I think. And there is no 46. There is no 4602 that we're seeing right now.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, this is Diane Bailey from the Department of Education. That was one-time funding. I think it was a footnote, and so we set that up in its own budget, and it's not in the 17-18 because it's one-time funding. So.
Okay. So which budget is it in? 206.
It's in last year.
It's in last year?
Yes.
All right.
And that amount was, tell us again what that amount we did one time.
You said 330?
I think it was $1 million, wasn't it?
Mr. Chairman, yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm not sure. Mr. Chairman, I know the remaining balance is right around $331,000. I believe it was initiated at $1 million.
$1 million. It is $1 million.
Okay. And so how much is left out of that $1 million?
330.
And you don't anticipate you'll revert any of that. And that's all been used for contracts then?
Just double check my notes here on that. Contracts, yeah, various ways through technical expertise to actual deliverables of professional development or platforms to provide professional development.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, let me ask you a question on this this new evaluation model. Does that go from top to bottom? I mean, including your senior staff, your SUPs, all the way down to your teachers?
Mr. Chairman.
Are you evaluating everybody?
Mr. Chairman, yeah, I'll give you an example. So Project ECHO, we said, is something that, you know, we're seeing leadership participate in. So to evaluate that, what we would do is go to those participants of that program, and we would do some of those focus groups and those interviews with those to see what they've done because they've participated in a Project ECHO. What changes have they made because of their participation? PLC the same way. So you have teachers attending regional PLC events. They'll likely grab a good sample size of those teachers that attended or leaders, whoever attended, and do the same kind of study and
PLC.
Do that evaluation. My apologies, Mr. Chairman. Professional Learning Communities. So yes, it will extend from the classroom through the superintendent.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
So just looking at, I see a contract out of 4602 that was... It expires, of course, is $132,000. Is that a, it says it expires, it's for to strategic planning for the SSOS?
Mr. Chairman, that is a contract for that work for the state board. For that is with Dr. Dvorak. For the strategic planning and implementation guide, and he is also facilitating the work of the collaborative council.
I see. So that's going to end at the end of this biennium?
Correct. Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
So he's hired to set up the framework, and then he'll be done with that work in June.
Mr. Chairman, correct. Representative Harshman.
Okay. There's some others just looking at this. So the ECHO project, $265,000 support for how does? I'm just reading the purpose. It says So just kind of how what is that? Does that pay for wind time or what is that? I mean,
Mr. Chairman, that's broken into different ways. $50,000 is just to use the Project Echo platform. So anytime Project Echo is used, there's a $50,000 fee for that. And there's several in the state currently, and there's proposals for future ones. So you're going to have $50,000. In this first year, there's some funding tied to that for some staffing support just to build the structure in place to, you know, to put together a year's worth of calendar and events for our leadership, educational leadership in Wyoming. And then it turns out that about 170 or about 75,000 of that 265 that you see there is really was diverted into some type of a coaching support model. So through the Wyoming Center for Educational Leadership, they've got in place a coaching model that districts can take advantage of, in which they can send or assign their principals to a coach through the Wyoming Center for Educational Leadership. And so that funding that is part of that 265 helped pay for some of that training, like through McCrell, one of the regional labs, and the districts, if they want to participate, they also have some skin in the game in that there's a cost for the districts to have a principal participate in that type of training. And so that wasn't captured in that narrative. So I apologize, Mr. Chairman. That just wanted to make sure that was clear.
So, Mr. Chairman, where are these principal trainings held at then? At the University of Wyoming, or are they out of state, or where are they?
Mr. Chairman, they are on sites.
Oh, they're on site.
They will come to the districts and work with those.
Oh, okay. So is this $265,000, you said the $50,000 to set up the Echo. So that's set up. That's not going to be an ongoing, or is that a $50,000 quarterly cost or a yearly cost? Or?
Mr. Chairman, I just spoke with the Wyoming Center for Educational Leadership this afternoon in anticipation of that. And so it was what was shared with me is that, again, the $50,000 is what we can look at for continuing the cost of this or any other Echo types of platforms. They're talking about wanting to do one for just principals, curriculum coordinators, directors, and each time you would want to add one, there'd be a $50,000 cost. So
cost.
Moving forward, it would be less than the $265 annual cost.
Okay. Well, I guess it seems like we've got some of this stuff built up with this $1 million, and that was one-time money. What's the budget look like in 2017-18 for these activities, and where is that at in 206 now?
Mr. Chairman, part of that, what we see in the work that the department is taking on right now with our own steering committee around the system of support, bringing together their directors and folks from every team in the division is trying to address that very question. So how do we use our current funding that we have within the Wyoming Department of Education to continue some of these things, given they get a good result back from an evaluation model, to continue? And so that's some of the work that we're doing right now. So we would anticipate that we hope that we can capture some of those sustained costs for those things that we want to sustain through the department budget, and then for anything that we're short on, you know, could potentially be an ask for in the future. We have ESSA reauthorization, and it's important to be following that because with that you've got changes in the way federal funding streams are flowing through ESSA, and so there's several components of that that have language that's tied to things within a support model. There's a whole component of support through that, so we'll be watching that as well.
So, you know, and I'd mentioned that, so in the 2017-18 budget, so where is this money at then? You say you haven't identified it yet, how we're going to spend it. I got some notes that it was like in Unit 1231, but I don't even see that. Where's in school support? Maybe Diane,
please.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Harshman, we got together this morning and in anticipation of some of these questions at least, and tried to make a list for us as we were speaking to you. 1231 is the school improvement budget, and that is school foundation funding. I believe our appropriation that we requested was $2,385,000, a little more than that.
Right.
Do you find that in the budget?
Yes, okay. Page 123 if you get the hard copy.
Should have brought the budget book.
123 in budget. It's 206.
And that's just
unit
the first
1231.
One.
And that, I'm sorry?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, that's just the first one that we have listed here. So.
All right. So go ahead and tell us about 1231.
Okay. And then a unit, let's see, I wish I'd had these in order, but unit 1327, which is teacher leader quality. Thank you. 1327. So that'll be in the next division. And that's also school foundation funding.
Now,
but how do you identify this? That's what I think that's what he's getting at.
Yeah, I mean, so I guess let me precise my question so maybe I even understand what I'm asking. So how much is – you're not going to spend the whole – let's go back to 1231.
Okay.
You're not going to spend the whole $2.385 million on this. You're going to dip into these individual units and pull pieces out. Is that what I'm understanding?
That's correct. We also have a column here that says the tie to the WAEA work, and I could discuss that as well.
Does that say that
for
in the
each? For I'm not sure.
Oh, you're not looking at. Okay,
yeah.
I'm just trying to correlate in the budget. Okay.
So, like for instance, on 1231, Representative, it talks about consultant contracts for technical expertise for the WAEA model, the statewide PLC, which is
Professional Learning Community,
the ECHO project, and technical support for state systems of support. So, yes, you're correct, Representative. That wouldn't be it would be pieces of that.
So how much then do you think will come out of 1231? I'm just trying to get a total on this, what's going to go into the statewide system of supports.
And I'm going to look back in the back and see.
So the next question is, you know, you just reorganize. Why wouldn't you have a unit, statewide system of supports? Or is it, I know this budget probably started in July, and it probably is maybe next year, actually, or next time.
Well, it's Representative, Mr. Chairman and Representative, it's maybe not too late if you,
right.
You know, we could do that as well.
Okay.
It would be clear to everybody then.
Right. So 1231 then, and then, and maybe, Ms. Chairman, our time is so limited. Maybe, Diane, maybe that you could just give us kind of the make, you know, 1231, we're taking 200,000 out for this.
Mm-hmm.
1327, we're taking 500,000 out for this. So we can kind of see those totals. And maybe we can do that. Maybe we can pull them all in together for a unit.
Mm-hmm.
And then we kind of have that whole standard and the history behind it so we can see where it's at.
I agree. Mr. Chairman and Representative, I agree. That would be
so maybe that's good. It. And then we don't have to flesh it all out. All right. Time is so crunched on this.
And we could have that to you tomorrow, I hope.
Good.
Okay, that'd be fantastic.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I just had a... My only other issue on the callback was, I think it's, Diane, is it in these, it's the little guy assessments, K to second grade assessments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm probably a culprit on some of this back when I made a motion years ago on the computer adapted assessment. Anyway, I won't go into all that history, but where is that? Is that 13? Where was that? I saw it.
1306.
Pardon?
1306. Is it
1306? 1306, Representative.
So what page is that on?
I don't even see it here.
I'm going to try to.
About.
Yeah.
181.
About
181
or so.
180.
For 1306, it was 181, maybe?
Yeah, 180 starts 180. At 180 and 180.
Representative and one. Mr. Chairman, that's 180 on the book that the superintendent loaned me.
Uh-huh.
Okay. That's early learning. I'm thinking it's I'm looking at K-3 assessment right here. It's on page 187, I think. I mean, and I got my notes on this that says this needs to be looked at. And then this goes back, you know, a month ago, I guess, or whenever we did hearings. But my question is, I mean, is this really needed? I mean, some of this goes back to, I think, Senator Scott's first reading assessment stuff back when half of you senators were House members. And I was just old enough to vote, probably. So I think, I'm just wondering, I mean, if some of this stuff, and I just go back to these early days of this computer adapted tests, and now it's grown into this monster 50 question, little kids sitting there, when can I get out of here, and pushing a button on a computer. And I'm just wondering if this is money. I mean, this is a lot of money. So talk to me about it.
Mr. Chairman, this is Brent Bacon, WDE Chief Academic Officer, and I, too, was learning about this afternoon as well. The 1309 budget, I believe, is what you're talking about, the $345,000. And that funding pays for the person who also follows the 1306 budget and also the TANF preschool stuff, okay? So when you're talking about the testing pieces of this, only $60,000 out of the 1309 budget was used for to pay for assessments across the state, and that is for the IFK, is what it's called, the IFK Early Childhood. Okay, and when you look at the 1306 budget, that is where we've paid for the Early Childhood MAP program, which is called CPAA, and we paid $128,000 out of that budget.
Well, Mr. Chairman, so you said the pays for the person runs the 06 and 08 units. Can't that be transferred to, like, federal funds or something? You mentioned it's I guess I'd like to try to save us $345,000.
Mr. Chairman, my boss is standing behind me. I'm not sure if I should say yes or no on that. But but I will do what you tell us to do. How about that?
Okay. Well, I think I had those questions. There's lots more. And it's like, say, with the Mr. Chairman, with the. So, okay. So we'll look forward to the homework assignment and then we'll kind of sleep on this 1309. But, boy, if you got any more information for me on this and how we could maybe shift this person to a federally funded position to take care of 06 and 08, I'd sure be interested in hearing it.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Harshman, how about we just come up with some options?
That'd be fantastic.
Great.
I think we could. Okay. All right. Okay. I think that's all I got. I really appreciate you guys being here. And
thank you.
And Madam Superintendent, appreciate it. And so maybe we can help that budget along, Diane, and get another unit in there.
Oh, boy.
One more unit. Ooh. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, you're welcome. Well, Treasurer Gordon and his staff are here. And then we'll take up the judiciary. Okay, now we're just letting people clear out here, Mr. Treasurer, and we'll begin here in just a sec, since we get... All righty, well, welcome back, Mr. Treasurer and Deputy Arp. And,
thank you.
I know that Representative Burkhardt had asked for a call back with you, and I believe it, there's some question about your 900 series, if that's... am I right? I don't know if your mic is on.
I'm trying to. Is that it? I'll just hold it down. That a little reverse.
Hit that guy that's
there.
Thank you, Don. Members of the committee, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Apologies for being a little bit late getting here. We're not sure about the time yet, and we follow a fire truck over here. But let me pass this off to Deputy Arp, and we can respond to your questions.
Okay. Deputy Arp.
Mr. Chairman, it's my understanding that the questions pertain to the 900 series. The sheet we received on the global budget reduction, a reduction in our budget of the $87,000, and I think the question was, and we're prepared to answer, what the in the operations budget would be, what it is, and what the 901 series is used for. If you're in the treasurer's budget, I think the best place to look at this probably is on page 16.
16, okay.
That is the operations budget. I might start by saying, if you might recall, we have a number of budgets that we're responsible for, such as unclaimed property, other investments budget that pays for investment managers, those types of things. We have other flow-through funds and all that for Indian Motor Vehicle and Veterans Tax Exemption. But the focus here, I believe, is in the operating budget itself for the agency under 900 contractual services, specifically in the 901 professional fees. What are those? And what do we use those funds for? I believe that's the question that's posed to us. So, Mr. Chairman, primarily those are banking fees, and they fall out a few different ways. We have a depository banking fees, as you know, and then also custody banking fees. You'll see on page 16 in column 3 that our standard budget is a little over $1.7 million. Mm-hmm. And you'll also see that we asked for actually an exception request in that very category of almost $560,000. The testimony prior, and I'll just remind you, is that with Depository Bank right now, we get about 2%. We have a very good contract at the moment, so we get about 2% on the money that we have on deposit with our depository bank. But we are in the process of doing an RFP on that, and we know that in this financial world at the moment, we're not going to be getting any 2%. We'd be lucky to get 0.25%. And right now, the 2% helps us cover those banking fees. It's kind of an offset. But we know that won't be the case in the future. And so that's where the $559,000 came in our exception budget. You also, in that $1.7 million is our custody banking fee. So as you know, when we have our investments, then we have to have a custody bank handling that money flow back and forth for us. So the banking fees for that are included in there. And then those are... $500,000 a year, over $500,000 a year for depository bank, over $1 million a year for the custody bank, and then some lesser things In that 1.7 is a piece of the RVK contract that I also think you're familiar with. That's our investment consultant. The Office of State Lands and Investments pays for a piece of that consultant because the SLIB board has a statutory obligation to oversee those managers. But we have a piece of that contract as well because they provide consulting services to us for our investments. The fourth thing in that $1.7 million is our QED program that you've heard us refer to previously, which is our in-house program that helps us track funds and interfaces with the state's WOLFS system so that disbursements, distributions can be made across agencies and to funds where those need to be received. And so those are the types of things, Representative Burkhart, that are in those fees. And as you'll see, I think the question was the across-the-board cuts gave us an $87,000 cut in that area, and yet we needed our standard plus about $500,000 to even cover all these fees this coming biennium. And I think the question was, how drastic was the $87,000 cut, and what would it mean we would be cutting? And so that's the explanation, primarily banking fees mostly, to a lesser extent our consulting fees for investments, and then our QED electronic system that interfaces with WOLFS.
Okay. WARP, and then I'll let Don. You said you have an RFP on the banking depository banks out. When does that contract end?
Mr. Chairman, on the depository bank, that one goes until December. So we'll be 6 months into the new biennium when that one will go into effect. And so that's that RFP will go out here actually probably in the next couple months, because you have to pretty much choose early. And if we were to change depository banks, then that's a number of month process. So it will happen. The RFP will happen fairly soon, actually.
Okay. So we can expect 2% though through December?
That's correct.
Fair? Okay. Thank you. Don?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So in the exception request, the $559,792, should we consider that to be an exact number? It's kind of an odd number. That's why I asked the question. Most exception requests are a little more rounded.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, what we did there was we just tried to calculate if we were not getting that 2% as an offset. And if we did get about 0.25%, which at this point, you know, we haven't negotiated that contract. It's hard to tell if it'd be a little more, a little less than that with this current situation. But that's how we calculated that number, was the just recovering the offset that this time we'd have to pay.
So, Mr. Chairman, so Deputy Arp, so the $559,000 is what you calculated to be that offset and only that?
Mr. Chairman and Representative, I believe that's true. I think it's the how we calculated that exception was the offset.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Follow up. So the total of the $2.3 million is kind of to you a hard fast number that you actually need to have to pay all those fees?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes, that's the number that we believe we need to have. Now, as I said, the RFP is out. We're going to have to be contracting, but the looks of what we will get and what other people are getting at this point in time for interest for those types of contracts, that's what we calculated it at that we would need, yes.
Mr. Chairman, then follow up. So how long is the contract for, length of time? Do you go out to do the depository banks?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, generally, I believe they have been 5-year contracts, were some for?
Mostly 5.
Mr. Chairman, yes, mostly 5-year contracts.
Yes.
Just follow up on that, Pat. The so when you when in your calculations, you take into account the fact that the current contract runs through December, or did you do it for the? Is this the amount you calculated for the biennium, regardless?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, yes, we calculated it for the amount we'd need for the biennium, which is really. 3/4 of a biennium, not a full biennium.
Okay. Any other questions? Anything further for the State Treasurer's Office? Well, thank you. That was helpful.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you
for Mr. coming. Chair, the one thing I did want to make sure that the committee understood is when it comes to the consulting fees, considering the times that we're in and the difficulties we have, the double hit, if you will, both to our side and to the Office of State Lands and Investments, could that is also another RFP we are engaging that could be problematic. Just leave that thought with you.
Kind of what we're facing in these days, isn't it?
That's not problematic.
Mr. Chair,
I'm just curious why these particular funds are designated as general funds, and would it make any difference if we move them to a non-general fund source?
Where would you go?
Just the investment stream.
Oh, you go from the investment side.
Mr. Chairman, and Representative Nicholas, I think that there could be consideration of on the custody bank piece of taking that from investment funds, because clearly you wouldn't really have the magnitude of custody banking fees but for the fact that you have large investments. So it seems like the custody portion of those fees could indeed be taken from investment funds. We'd have to, you know, take a look at whether does that help or not help for budget purposes. It might help right now for the general fund piece of this. As far as the depository bank goes, that is the deposits across state agencies, and I think we'd be hard-pressed to say that was for the purposes of investments. So that would be my assessment.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Vice President.
Going up on that, though, I mean, if we move that to the investment revenue account, I mean, at the end of the day, doesn't that increase dollar for dollar the investment revenue that flows into the general fund? Although, given our this morning's conversation in the governor's office, maybe not so, but anyway.
Wouldn't you agree?
I don't know about that.
Okay. Well, thank you. Appreciate your scrambling to get over here. It's not easy. I know. All right, the last call back for today is the judiciary. I think the Chief Justice is here along with his staff. So, welcome, Mr. Chief Justice, and Senator Perkins and I asked for a call back with you to have you explain. Senator Perkins made a reduction to your budget based on reversions in the past, and so we'd like to get an update and briefing as to what that does to your budget and if you can just explain. I mean, I know that you know, I don't have a percentage, but it's got to be pretty high. Out of your 70-some million-dollar budget, probably $65 million or whatever is salaries and employees. And I don't even think you have any vacancies, but I don't know. Go ahead and bring us up to date, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We certainly appreciate the opportunity to come back and visit with you all. To my right is Christy Racines, who is our Chief Fiscal Officer. We also have Lily Sharp, our Court Administrator, and Julie Goen, the head of our IT department, with us if there's any question. I will say that the motion and the acceptance of the motion in the round robin did cause me to take a little bit different direction in my State of the Judiciary remarks, and I spent some time in that because I think it is important to provide some context with regards to the nature of the judiciary budget. And I think, Mr. Chairman, you had the numbers pretty dead on. Our total general fund standard budget is $72.9 million. Of that, $65.5 million are salaries. Of those $65.5 million in salaries, $22.7 million are statutorily set. That's for our Supreme Court, our district judges, our with 23 district judges, 24 circuit judges, and also included in that, which surprised me a little bit, was the 19 retired judges who are receiving their retirement benefits out of the old retirement system. All the current judges, as they move forward, I think there's only two or three that may still be eligible to go into that old retirement, and that's funded separately. But for the time being, we have 19 currently in that. And then our other payroll is when you subtract that out, our other payroll is $42.8 million, which leaves us a total of about $7.5 million in for all other aspects of the judicial branch operation. So $1.1 million out of that $7.5 million, if we're going to look at it that way, is a pretty big hit for us. With regards to the reversions that were talked about, several of those are a big chunk of that is from salaries as you go through the year. We're really pretty good about not having long vacancies. Particularly, that's our whole judicial nominating commission is set up so that we're not like the federal government where we can where you have those vacancies that can exist for long times with a lot of political maneuvering sometimes with regards to whether or not they're even brought up. Statutorily, constitutionally, we're required to fill those positions in 90 days. And the governor, we have 60 days to get the names of the governor and 30 to get the governor to make his choice. And usually, there would be a justice, like Justice Kite, when she retired, she gives notice that she's going to retire. So we start that process before, her vacancy actually occurs. And so when, the day comes, we've got a new justice that's been selected and comes and takes over right away. Sometimes, though, there is a gap, and that would be in Justice Kautz's situation here. When he was a district judge, he was then selected to fill Justice Kite's. Well, then that triggers that 90 days. But for 90 days, that's going to be when he comes in. You know, he comes in pretty quickly, but there's going to be a lag at the district court level. So sometimes we can build up some reversions in salary, and that's kind of how it happens to us. In that last year, Judge Bentley passed away, and he was 100 years old. God rest his soul. He passed away, but that freed up some money for reversions. So that's a big chunk of our reversions. And then the other big chunk came with the related to the e-filing. There was a maintenance agreements, and Christy can touch base on that.
Right, and just an overview. The as Justice Burke mentioned, the overwhelming majority of our reversions are from our 100 series. The one exception from that is we did revert about $1.9 million from our court technology budget. That was, frankly, an anomaly. The reason that happened is, as you know, we have a lot of large-scale IT projects underway, and we have had for some time, in particular YUSER, which is the computer system within the district courts, and we have multiple products with that vendor. And these products demand pretty pretty large maintenance and support fees every year. Now, during the 13-14 biennium, we had budgeted that some of those projects would be up and running 100% of the biennium, and therefore we had asked for funding that year to fund those maintenance fees. Those, some of those projects were not 100% implemented by that biennium. Therefore, we did not pay those, fees out, and we did revert them. We do not expect to revert that much or have, any cushion in that area in the 17-18 budget.
Okay. So when you say most of it comes out of your 100 series, do you have, do you have an average or? Do you have any idea? I mean, does it tend to be? I know it's kind of dependent on, you know, the judges retiring or whatever else.
Mr. Chairman, are you referring to, for example, a percentage of our reversions that are payroll or a dollar amount that we may expect to revert?
A dollar would be fine. I mean, do you know? I mean, that may not even be a fair question.
Sure, Mr. Chairman. For the 13-14 biennium, we reverted just under $2.5 million in payroll.
And was that a high? Was that high?
I'm
trying to help you here.
you know,
that sounds like a lot. Yeah,
Mr. Chairman, it was high, and I, you know.
Well, we need our help.
Mr. Chairman, the 13-14 biennium is the only biennium I have that figure for. However, I can attest to, you know, Justice Burke mentioned the judicial vacancies. I do know that the 13-14 biennium, and Justice Kite was the chief at the time, that was actually a record number of judicial openings during that time. And those do add up during that. For example, as Justice Burke explained, we try to minimize the gap in judicial vacancies. However, we had, he mentioned Judge Bentley passing away, who was a retiree, but we had an active sitting judge pass away as well during the 13-14 biennium. And as the judges are a higher paid salary than the average state employee, those can add up very quickly. And during that 13-14 biennium, we had something, 12 to, I'd have to get the exact number, but it was somewhere in 12 to 15 judicial vacancies during that time. So I do believe that number was a little bit higher than it would be normally.
Don? Yes.
Don, can we get that info going back a couple bienniums? Look at their reversions.
Mr. Chairman, I did put that together for Senator Perkins, and I, in fact, I don't know. Is it on SharePoint? Or?
You got the.
Yeah,
it may be on SharePoint, but if it's not, I'll be sure to.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I don't remember the numbers off the top of my head, but it seemed like the last two, the one of them was about $1.5 million, and the other one was about $1.2 million, between $1.2 million and $1.3 million, I think, and then there's the one that you're talking about, I think, which is probably going to. Probably it's going to be this biennium, and the $2.2 million. I don't remember seeing that number.
I'm sorry. What was the question?
When biennium was the $2.2 million reversion? Because looking at the numbers, I don't remember seeing that number.
2.5
or 2.
Mr. 5. Chairman, Senator Perkins, I believe that was the 11-12 biennium.
So, Mr. Chairman, the bottom line is that we could find the money, but what we'll have to do is we just have to under budget salaries and hope that a couple judges die. Or retired judges.
That's not funny now.
No, but we would have to under budget salaries. That's the only way we would get that money from.
Yeah. Well, that's like betting on the come. It's like when you win the lottery.
I don't know about that. A little more predictable than that.
Okay. All right. Any further questions of the judiciary? Well, that gives us a better idea, and we'll try to work your budget.
Well, we would appreciate any any help that we could get. We, I don't want to beg. I don't think that's seemly, but we really are. We really are. Awfully,
I get it.
Awfully.
Yeah, you are, and there's no doubt about it. And so when you look at that, it's not a lot of areas to cut unless
right.
So. And, Mr. Chairman, as you mentioned, we didn't. I think someone mentioned we don't have a lot of vacancies. That is accurate. Of our general fund positions right now, we have no vacancies currently. Right. So,
thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, committee, we're you want to take a 5-minute or something? And then we'll come back with Dawn, and we'll finish up going through the general operations budget, and then get ready for working it probably tomorrow. heck with those guys. Wasserberger and Burns, wherever you are, get in here. Okay. Well, I think we finished up. We were on page 34, or we were and I think we had gone through footnote number 4, as I'm my record show.
Mr. Chairman, Don Richards with the Legislative Service Office. I believe you are correct, although we did identify some answers to prior questions, which I'll just touch base on briefly. On page 31, there was a question about the WIN program, Wyoming Nursing and Health, and I kind of estimated that at 65-35. It actually is 31-69. 69% for faculty support, 31% for scholarships, grants, and loans.
Okay.
Also on Section 60, Office of State Lands, I did want to bring to your attention an unusual vote by the committee and wanted to make sure we had interpreted it correctly or not. You will recall that you denied a vacant position or a exception request in the Forestry Division, but you said they could fill it with another vacant position. That was the original position of the committee. Then when in the round robin, you went and deleted the position that you said the agency could use to fill their exception request with. So the net we have now is a negative 3 positions, but it's an odd sequence of events. Wanted to make sure that was actually the intent of the committee. Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, that is in the forestry program of the Office of State Lands and Investments, which appears on the line 25, page 31, is the funding, and line 6, page 32, are the FT authorizations. If you wanted to add back one of those positions, it would come at a cost of about $101,000.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you. 100 and what?
101.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
The original request was for, they had some money set aside, and they were going to use this vacant position to reclassify it, and the committee said, just use this 099 position number and no new money. So I believe it was like $152,000 would have been the amount that they needed. Now, they may have other vacancies that they could do. The problem with our concern was just the specificity of the motion. It wasn't just reclassify and use another vacant. It was a specific position number, which was then later specifically removed. So Mr. Chairman, to sum up, you have a couple options. You can add some funding to this and restore that position, or you can choose to leave it as is and give us some direction, or the agency some direction, that they can use a vacancy to reclassify, a different vacancy to reclassify the position.
Well, do we know if they even have any vacancies? Not now.
Mr. Chairman, I believe the agency probably doesn't. I haven't looked at the whole agency list, but within that division, they might not have a vacancy, but within an agency, I think they do.
Can we look and see what vacancies they have now in the development real quick? I'm trying to find.
Mr. Chairman, I'll look at that tonight, and maybe we can bring that to you tomorrow to see if there are any possible options while you all can think about that.
Mr. Chairman? Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, I'm just a little bit confused, but I mean, initially we identified those by a specific position when we were doing the vacancies. But then in the end, they ended up not being the elimination of a number of positions as opposed, I mean, the identification of the number was only so that we knew how much money to take, and not necessarily, we weren't being so specific as to eliminate specific positions, but just simply a number of positions, and then we identified the positions to get the number. That's how I thought we were doing it, because, I mean, we identified all kinds of specific ones as we went through, but in this instance, it seems like that it ended up being maybe too specific. Is that what I understand you to say?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, that's exactly right. This happened to have been, I don't know if you're looking in your books, but it was a exception position request on page 80 in that forestry division. And I believe that the committee was looking at that vacancy list that had been circulated to the committee and saw that there was another vacant position in the forestry division. I'm only surmising, and was very specific. And as you said, that's unusual. We the committee might normally say, why don't you use some of these vacancies and reclassify it, but not necessarily so specific as to the exact position number. That's why we're having a conflict.
Okay.
Okay. All right, so now we're back to 34.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Bottom of page 34, footnote number 5 provides for the essentially the same matching requirements that was imposed in the 15-16 budget for the $8 million appropriation for UW. The bottom of page 6, and I would direct this particularly to Representative Connolly's amendment, the governor requested, I believe it was 11.5, excuse me. We're on the bottom of page 35, top of page 36.
Did we take care of everything on 34? I mean,
yeah.
Okay. And then we've got, all right.
And then bottom of, we're on footnote number 6 on the bottom of 35.
Yes, okay. Mr. Chairman, and the governor asked for $11.5 million in endowment matching funds, and he was rather specific as to the three programs that he supported for that endowment. Representative Connolly had a successful amendment that pulled out 10% of that. And the important thing about that amendment is it pulled it out not for endowment purposes, but for matching funds purposes, more similar to footnote number 5, which would allow increments of $200,000 projects or less to be matched by private donors, and then those funds could be expended immediately, as opposed to an endowment where the corpus would generate ongoing revenue. And so that's how we distinguished between the two. If matching funds of the $1.15 million or 10% of the governor's request are not matched, then they could use that for the endowment funds in footnote number 10. And that concludes UW.
In footnote number six.
Footnote number 6, the $10 million in footnote number 6.
Right. Well, what's footnote number 7?
Excuse me?
What is footnote number 7 on page 36, then?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that's the 10% Connolly.
That's what I thought. All right. Got it. All right.
Section 69, we do have a question here, particularly with respect to the footnote. There's actually two interpretations of the committee's motion. One is that the entire exception budget is one time or shall not appear in the next standard budget. And an alternative interpretation was that only $62,000 and change was intended to be one time. You'll recall this is essentially a request for the witchy costs of increases in inflation. The language actually says that the exception request shall be one time, but we didn't know whether you were referring to that page or the entire exception request. So if it's just that page at $62,772, if it was the entire agency's exception request, it is $436,000.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
Witchie, does that include the wide-end program?
Mr. Chairman, no.
It doesn't. Thank you.
Okay.
So you couldn't tell by what the discussion was, but was there a general, we weren't discussing the entire budget, were we?
Mr. Chairman, there's really only a couple of pages to this budget. So I interpreted the motion to be the entire exception request. Don interpreted it to be split, and we could not identify or distinguish that from the recordings.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Just checking my notes, I think the motion was, you may remember if I made it or not, but I think it was specifically referring to the 62772 which was listed as recurring in the budget, and we wanted it to not be recurring. So.
Okay.
And we could take that as a technical correction if that's the will of the committee. And it was your motion. Section 70, Enhanced Oil Recovery Commission, and section has no footnotes. Section 072, the retirement system, has a single footnote, which provides for maximum salary amounts for the investment officer positions, as well as the executive director of this agency. Just a note in passing that the committee did not increase any funds appropriation for those. They increased the footnote amounts, but no increase in authorization of pension funds to support those amounts. They could acquire those funds through vacancy savings or through a B-11 from the agency themselves to accomplish that goal.
I'm trying to recall. My understanding was that there's a statutorily they have a range, and we're still not at the top of those ranges, so that they could do those pay increases without necessarily getting appropriate or approval through us for those specific wages.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, technically speaking, in the absence of that footnote, I think you could make an argument that the agency could increase these positions at an almost unlimited amount. The reason being is A&I apparently does not classify or have bans for these positions, so there is no maximum in the state's system.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would think we'd call it a technical correction just to approve the appropriation of the amounts that we said are capped at what we're saying they can pay the folks.
Mr. Chairman, we can do that and align that with the footnote. Mr. Chairman, on Section 77 ETS, no footnotes are included there, but I did want to bring up and reiterate a point that the global reductions were made based upon their exception requests, not on their standard budget, in contrast with all other agencies. Section 80, the Department of Corrections, has just one footnote, and it specifically provides for wide latitude or flex authority within the state penitentiary facility management system, and allows the department to transfer funds to ensure adequate levels of mechanical, electrical, and safety system operations only at the state pen where they are having some facility challenges.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
In talking to Mr. Lampert on the recall this morning, one of the things we were talking about was giving him more flex to work with his employees, where to put his employees. Is this where we would put that? At this portion in this bill?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that flex is already afforded to the Department of Corrections and, candidly, all agencies that have budget reductions, which is all of them, in a Section 300. So we'll discuss that. It certainly could be broader. However, and I think it's an important clarification, when you did your global reductions, the penny plan, the 10% travel, and the like, a component of that motion was to provide the governor what I refer to as super flex, meaning right. that he has the ability to flex funds across series. That means from personnel to supplies, across units, across divisions, and across agencies in an unlimited manner up to the magnitude of the global cuts.
Well, Bob didn't seem to be aware of that.
Mr. Chairman, I would agree. And
I think, Mr. Chairman.
Need I say more?
Mr. Chairman.
I think the whole executive has been kind of unaware of this, and I'll just be frank, Mr. Chairman. I think you can see in this budget the cuts. I mean, nobody's going to go home and not know what was cut. We know what was cut. But we're also saying, okay, we're now part-timers. We're going back to our real life. You guys in executive are running this government, And if you need to move some money around, we'd give you this super flex on these across-the-board cuts. That's all we did. And so I think it's been portrayed, unfortunately, as something else. And so I think we got to all be clear on it, make sure. And, you know, it's all part of the leadership of this committee to make sure our floors are both clear on it. And read the language in the Section 300. I mean, it's pretty clear. And this applies to all those global reductions, which are what, 27 million out of the 100 million? Is it that much? Is that the number?
Mr. Chairman, I think it's 38 because 38. The 27 is the penny plan and then
all
the 900 in travel.
38 out of the 100 million.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, on this agency, did we not continue the footnote for the recruitment component, or was that money already set aside out of the last budget and in motion? I just can't remember.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greer, I believe the language appears in Section 308 rather than a footnote for that.
Okie doke.
So, and just to clarify that, in order for an agency to do it, to go from across series, they have to then get the approval of the governor to do it. So they just come up with and ask for it.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. And part of that conceptually is some of them may say, hey, we can't do this. The board of parole for the next agency is a very small board. I don't know if they have, a travel budget that can absorb a 1.5% and a 10%. They may go make their case to the budget office and the governor's office to say, hey, we can get 7% for you, but we need help from another agency to accomplish the, and that's a bit of the reason why, someone has to sign off on the use of the flex.
Okay.
Section 81 Board of Parole does not have, nor does the Wyoming, Business Council. I would note that, We now have a unit that no longer appears here as the Main Street program was removed from the Business Council on line 26 and 27. That was part of the motion to deny the Rural Development Council positions. Section 101, the Supreme.
That confused me, Mr. Chairman. You say the Main Street just got, I mean, he reorganized and basically put everything into his. Into one unit. Are you saying the Main Street's not in that unit anymore?
Mr. Chairman, there used to be a unit between the Business Council and Investment Ready Communities that was comprised of the Main Street Program and the Rural Development Council. They moved two of them up, and then the Rural Development Council was, the funding for it was eliminated by this committee.
Right. Thank you.
Okay.
Section 101, the Supreme Court. We do have an inquiry here as well, with respect to the $50,000, and again, we apologize. Like, there were three motions. We understood that there was $50,000. There's a difference of opinion. I understood that it was $50,000 provided for to finish up the Judicial Learning Center. Another interpretation of that was $50,000 general fund, $50,000 of court fees, and it is not clear what the final action of the committee was.
That's the last one, wasn't it?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, and I think there was a couple iterations is why, but yeah, it was $50,000 out of the court fees and then $50,000 in general fund was what I recall the final action of the committee.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, she was right, and it's already written that way, so we got lucky, I guess.
Right, you're good, then.
Mr. Chairman, Section 102, Board of Law Examiners, Judicial Conduct and Ethics, and candidly, all of the judicial districts do not have footnotes until Judicial District 9A, which appears on page 47. I did want to pause, however, before leaving page 41. The Supreme Court, and you will note this in the superflex language, the $1.5 million motion to reduce the Supreme Court is all embedded within the Supreme Court, not within each district court. Now, the flex authority that comes with the $1.1 million reduction allows them to reduce the district courts as well with consultation of the district courts, recognizing that judicial balance of power within that branch of government. But it was not a proportional cut, and we did listen to that. It was all taken out of Agency 101.
That's right.
Page 47.
So just to follow up on that then, do we do any proportional cuts for travel or anything for the district courts?
Mr. Chairman, no.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
And that's the anticipation, is ultimately you're going to make that cut, but they're going to have to pull it from wherever they can get it. And so that's why the super flex. Because otherwise we're going to go down and you're going to be clipping $500 out of these various, you know, $500 or $600 out of these various accounts.
Okay. Page 47.
Page 47, we continue a footnote number one that was initiated last year regarding a Fremont County. This committee paid for half of that permanent part-time position, and they request that Fremont County pay for the other half. I don't believe we have another footnote until page 53, the University of Wyoming Medical Education. Footnote number one provides for flex authority in the 100 series. This was consistent with last year's appropriation, where you loosened up some ability to use vacancy savings for contract expenditures for the family practice residencies. Mm-hmm. Footnote number two provides a $200,000 review. This is an important one to make sure we got the language correct. The Wyoming Department of Health has first shot at doing the review of the family practice centers, and only if they indicate that they cannot conduct that review, then the family practice centers can use $200,000 and seek an external consultant or a RFP for an outside vendor to prepare the review. The Wyoming Department of Health was not appropriated any of those funds for the review.
Right.
Section 205 is the school foundation program. And there's only one footnote, but it is a lengthy one. Beginning on page 54, line 24, is the 1% 2017 or FY17 impact of the penny plan. And on page 55, beginning on line 19, is the FY18 impact of the 2% penny plan. So in essence, there ECA is reduced by 1% in fiscal year 17, and it is reduced by 2% in fiscal year 18.
Okay.
Chairman, just to be clear on that, it's 1% of the total dollar amount, but the reduction in the ECA is about 0.25%. I mean, it's like, let's say it's a 2% ECA. It's a little over that. There's four parts, 2.07 or whatever it averaged. So in the end, then that reduction in the ECA will go from a 2.whatever% to a 1% type. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have the exact numbers, but that methodology is correct.
Yeah. So that reference 1% is the dollar amount, not the percentage of the ECA. Okay. Right. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Chair, could we get the breakdown on that so that when we're on the floor and discussing it, I'd like to know what the real dollars are.
Well, it was 15-something in the first year.
Mr. Chairman, the dollar amounts we have not only by district, but we have in total. It's $15 million the first year, $30.7 million the second year. And that includes both the recapture portion and the state's portion. So it's $30.7 million to the entire state. Not all of that is appropriated. So Campbell County, for example, would pay the state more based upon, since they are a recapture school district. And another school district, Laramie County, would get less from the state in terms of an appropriation.
Okay. Campbell County always gets it.
Mr. Chairman, the next section is the Department of Education, who is just here to visit. And we did have a difficulty with this one, so we need to visit about this, I guess. They were also an exception agency where staff was directed to take their global cuts out of their exception budget. Candidly, we were not able to do that. And because of their reorganization, we could not identify where that money was in their new system in order to take the reductions. So the only way we can take their reductions is if we take it based on their standard budget, not on their exception request. We just cannot identify where those monies, where the 200 series travel money is if you look at their exception budget column. The only place you can see that is in their standard budget. It's going to be the same amount, but because of their reorganization, it's very difficult to flow those through. Keep in mind also that this agency is subject to the penny plan for their general funds and their school foundation program funds. So it's a, no, I wouldn't say it's a double cut, but it's a cut to two different revenue streams.
And Mr. Chair, because they have that super flex, though, even though we, it's harder to track, the net effect is the same. So,
Mr. Chairman, I think yes, it's very close, and they can change things. So you received a letter from the superintendent indicating a concern over meeting their maintenance of effort in some units. Some of them were a couple of $100s, I believe, or a couple of thousands of dollars. Again, they can move money and take it out of a different unit and maintain their maintenance of effort. And we just really had no choice in terms of the calculations on that.
And so where do you, I mean, you can't really see this on page 56 or 7, but.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. We just note it. Note it for you.
Okay.
And footnote number one on the top of page 57, I believe, came as a result of discussions with the Attorney General hearing in that no funds shall be expended in this agency for special education hearings, mediation, or external legal counsel without prior approval or consent of the Attorney General's office.
Okay.
Section 211, the Board of Equalization, and 220, Environmental Quality Council, and we begin multiple agencies, boards and commissions, none of which have any changes. They're not subject to any of the global budget reductions because these agencies, these commissions, do not have any general funds. So these are all self-supported by their fees.
Right.
And no footnotes and no reductions. You essentially approved all of their budgets as submitted and recommended by the governor. The next point of discussion begins on page 72 with the section 300s. Subsection A provides for movement of funds from the budget reserve account, that's standard language, to the general funds. I call that checking account 1 and checking account 2. Subsection B provides for the 5% budget standard statutory reserve amount as calculated by the 5% of the general funds for the entire biennium. Subsection C, this is going to be our budget balancer, and I can already tell it's going to change a little bit. For example, when every bill passes, today we adopted $40,000 for the health health facilities task force out of the general fund. Well, we don't have any general fund. So every bill that you pass will increase that amount that needs to be transferred from the LSRA. Right now we're sitting on about $34 million in here right now. I believe our latest I think our latest number is $34,018,000.
So, Mr. Chairman, on that particular point, so it means as the bodies, as we work general bills through that have appropriations, that number, that's where that number will change. So, how will we do that from a timing standpoint?
So, Mr. Chairman, Representative Greer, from a mechanical standpoint, staff provide a third reading amendment to both chairs, one in the House and one in the Senate, and sometimes we'll make them a dollar off or something to that effect. So they are eligible for discussion in the Joint Conference Committee, and we will take the snapshot at that point in time. And I believe the rules provide that we can write amendments for the chairs even during debate. So if the body approves $100 million in new spending of the LSRA account, we can make that adjustment and have this as the final amendment or a proxy for it.
Mr. Chairman, just a quick question on that. So in other ways, is it fair to say that this number will represent, I hate to use the word structural deficit, but ultimately this number in paragraph C, as we refer to that, but that's really the difference between what we're doing in this budget bill, which is the ongoing operations of government against the ongoing revenues of government. Is that a fair characterization of that paragraph?
Don?
Mr. Chairman, let me offer three answers, and you can pick the one you like. The first answer is yes. It is the structural deficit for the operations. The second answer is it could be 33 plus 104.5 because you did not fund the statutory reserve amount. That is also going to have to be paid for by the 1% severance tax. So add those two together, it's about $140 million. And then answer number three is there are some members of the body that I'm sensitive to, I staff all of you, who believe that local governments are not are a obligation of the state. That is not what the statute says, but I know that there's that viewpoint. There's $90 million there that's also coming out of the LSRA.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Co-Chair.
And then I think you could keep going. School capital construction, mm-hmm. all those things are debatable. But back to this budget balancer principle. And I'll just say that, you know, every budget we've had this number that we think, hey, we got about $50 million to spend. Now we're down to $40 million. Now we're down to $20 million. Now we're down to – and this deal, there's not – it goes the other way. Mm-hmm. And I guess I would – not something we decide tonight, but to think about, sleep on. I guess that the other thought was to make the 5% statutory reserve the budget balancer. Here's the $104 million, and we get down below $70 million, it's starting to get kind of scary time. And there's some other emergency flex for the governor if something crashes and we need another $150 million. But so there's two ways to look at this. As the number climbs up, this is how much you're taking out of our savings, or is there a number that we want to – so submit that to the committee to sleep on and think about. Don, I mean, that works that way, does it not, to have the statutory reserve or any number, really?
Mr. Chairman, absolutely. And that's essentially what this committee has done in the past is given a set amount of money for floor amendments and said, okay, we're not going to go above $40 million here and say this committee's line in the sand. And you could do that and then, you know, debate. That's essentially what the governor did for the legislature as well. I believe he appropriated sufficient funds from the LSRA such that there was a $28 million balance for the legislature to appropriate its own projects for. So that – it's three variations on the same theme.
All right.
Subsection D is the deappropriation of the funds from the STIA account. And I believe that other bill failed introduction today.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
First of all, I don't know which bill you're referring to, but how much money is in the STIA account?
Mr. Chairman, I believe it's $611,000. And there was a competing bill from the Minerals Committee for that same money.
Oh, to spend it?
Subsection E is a ratification of the governor's action to move $10 million out of Water 3 to address the FY16 budget shortfall. You basically ratified what he has already done. And then subsection F is a reversal of the governor's action with respect to the $48 million transfer from the School Foundation Program Reserve account. In other words, the legislature is directing the auditor to reverse the governor's action on that. You will also recall, and it's later on in the bill, you make the 1% severance tax diversion from the PMTF effective immediately, which is nearly the same amount. It's about $1 million difference, but roughly the same amount. And you elected to say this is a better way to address FY16 as opposed to taking it out of the SFRAW. Subsection G is an H. This is the budget balancers, which the committee approved. We just pulled them in from last year for the school capital construction account, the school foundation program, and a maximum amount for the permanent land fund holding account. I think we just pulled in last year's language, and that may not be the direction that this committee wishes to take. Let me walk through some issues here. Number one, the school foundation program is required to take a loan out for a sizable amount of money each year. I think last year was $220 million. Now, it has to pay interest on that. It's paying interest to itself because eventually that money will flow back to it, but it's not immediate. If they had a higher balance than $100 million, you could avoid all of those loan transactions with the auditor's office, the treasurer's office, the interest being paid from one pocket to the other. On the other hand, maybe you want that those transactions to occur. Also, in years past, you have made that $100 million balance at the end of each fiscal year rather than at the end of the biennium. The way it's written last year, and we just carried last year's forward, it is only at the end of the biennium, meaning the PLF holding account does not supplement those funds. And then on subsection H, the $600 million, there's a chance that we have strong revenues in terms of investment earnings in the last 3 months of the biennium between, say, March, April, through June. And we are at $550 million now. It is theoretically possible, and reversions of unspent money. And if we have a 0.5% increase in enrollment rather than a 1% increase in enrollment, or if our transportation reimbursements are 2% rather than 4%, that we could go over to say 625, 630, or even higher, and, you know, potentially, that money would be swept on June 30th to the permanent fund and inaccessible to address any CapCon or operation shortfall. It's not the likely situation, but it is technically possible.
Mr. Chairman, We didn't correct that last year in the supplemental.
Mr. Chairman, you did. You moved it from 475 to 600.
600, but we didn't. That was our correction. Wow. Okay. Well, we might have to correct again. I think we want to be careful on that. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Section 301 is standard language allowing the auditor to take out borrowing authority for cash flow purposes, and the $100 million cash flow for the YDOT, that's really to address federal congressional action that may be stymied. Section 302 provides the same or similar borrowing authority for the Hathaway scholarships. Again, those student payments are made, say, in August. That's early in the fiscal year. It's possible there's insufficient federal mineral royalties or investment income to pay for those first semester costs. Section 303 is the carryover appropriations. All of these, I believe, were at the request of the governor's office. The first one is the special contingency of $1 million. There's somewhat less than $1 million in that account to carry over. Brucellosis within the state auditor's office, but can only be distributed at the direction of the governor. The two C and D subsections provide for Colorado River litigation carryover and the Yellowstone River Compact carryover. That one, I think, is worth mentioning. Note that the Yellowstone River Compact carryover is not from the Yellowstone River Compact money. Rather, it's from the Bighorn River money. So that gets a little bit complicated. In addition, $90,000 of that is effective immediately because they have some ongoing litigation expenses with the Yellowstone River. Dual language immersion is a continuation of $450,000 appropriation from last year that would be available for the next biennium. Subsection F, the Wyoming Value Added Energy and Industrial Plan, provides for $17.3 million carryover. Almost all of that it remains available and unspent.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Back on that dual language immersion, I'd forgotten about that. Where is that money spent?
It isn't. Well, it's carryover.
It's being spent somewhere.
Just an expert on it.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's grants to school districts that offer the qualifying programs.
This is in schools?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman,
you want to do
work.
Mr. Chairman, subsection G, Education Technology, is the Department of Enterprise Technology Services, the E-rate, to collect the E-rate funds. Education Technology, they had some money that they were doing for the, the Unified Network? Longitudinal data system. Sorry, I wasn't prepared. Sorry.
Sorry about that, Mr. Chairman. I had to step away. The last carryover is subsection H with WildLink, and this is also consistent with the governor's recommendations. This is really an ideal request by the agency. Technically, this money has been transferred and resides in its own account over at the Department of Transportation, but this is really the way to maintain budget authority. For this. And then the fund balance definition is a standard definition. We did not change anything. That's essentially how to calculate the beginning balance on the goldenrod for the next biennium. So there's an agreement between the state auditor's office and LSO. Section 305, employee benefits, all of the maximum amount for employee benefit group health insurance, the employer contribution maximum amounts, have been populated by the Department of Administration and Information for the family plan, the single with children and split family and all of those for both years of the biennium. Subsection B in here provides $3.64 million. This was found in the state auditor's budget, and it provides retiree health insurance for those retirees prior to July 1, 2008. So this amount goes down each year. And then finally, subsection C provides that each of the agencies shall provide for retiree health insurance benefits accounts. That's, I believe, about a 0.6% on every payroll amount. Subsection D says that no general funds in this section can be transferred or expended for any other purpose. And subsection E provides that if adequate funds are available, employees paid for by non-general funds shall receive the same benefits. Occasionally, there are not sufficient funds available, a federal grant for something. The regular flex for the executive branch, 5% between agencies, 10% between programs, is in Section 306. The flex for judiciary of a standard amount, this is not the super flex, is in Section 307. Section 308 is the personal services transfers, and it also maintains the prohibition that this committee adopted last year, that 900 series funds cannot be transferred up to the 100 series personnel funds. You will also find at the top of page 87 the exemption for the family practice centers and the WAMI program and their use of 100 series appropriation, as well as in subsection B, the Department of Health and the University of Wyoming. And finally, on line 3 through 7 is Representative Greer's question, I believe, on the Department of Corrections exemption for recruitment efforts. Mr. Chairman, on the bottom of page 86, we use the same language as last year. The sentence that reads, "This section shall not apply to funding for intern positions," ending on the top of page 87, that program has been ceased and is also fixed so that this does not apply. So that sentence really has no meaning anymore. We could take it out if the committee so chooses.
Which sentence?
Page 86, line 28.
This subsection shall not apply to funding.
It does no harm, but it also has no impact.
I think you take it out.
Yeah.
Well, I know. We'll work it
out. We can do that as a technical correction.
I guess you're the chairman. You can do what you want.
Subsection C provides that the Department of Health shall operate through this flex authority in this section to address Title 25 payments. In essence, that they use their vacancy savings to address the cost of Title 25. The next section, 309, is the authorization for at-will employees. That's a continuation of a prior biennium subsection, as is Section 310, which provides for the governor to periodically review agency budgets. This is the section that he exercised late last fall. I'll call it October, end of October, middle of October. He identified a budget shortfall was imminent and initiated the vacancy freeze, budget reductions within agencies to address FY16 shortfall. You will also note that on page 89, we have put in place the IF 2016 Senate File XX, because we didn't know the name of it. That's the budget shortfall measures that was approved by this committee. If that bill passes, then this section does not need to be. There's a different process where the governor reports to the Joint Appropriations Committee, and then the Joint Appropriations Committee provides input. Section 311 at some point should probably be codified. There's no direction for the judiciary to submit their budgets. This is a holdover from prior years. We've continued it this year as approved by the committee. But this basically says the judiciary needs to submit their budgets on November 1 of 20.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Would you just put that on our interim committee list so that we just don't forget about it and that we tell us the same thing again next year? So
you don't tell them to do it. You just tell them we won't consider it.
Yeah.
That's all you have to
do. Yes, Mr. Chairman, I will do that. Section 312 is the major maintenance funding. You'll recall this is a somewhat reduced amount to the 1.5 percentage point, and then it is split between three departments. Well, the Department of Administration and Information, community colleges, and the university. We did change the language on this because much of this is now embedded in statute, the definition of routine maintenance, the definition of major maintenance. So we refer to those definitions rather than restate them here in this language. You will recall that there is a carve-out for state parks and cultural resources to be eligible for major maintenance funds. And what is not included here, but I bring it up to the committee, was last year you made a special provision for the military department, and you gave them a specified amount of major maintenance funds to address facility issues that they had requested. That was, again, last year. A revenue reduction provision in Section 313 provides that if Craig meets outside of the October normal meeting time and reduces the total appropriation or individual revenue estimate to the budget reserve account or the revenue estimate to the general fund by $150 million or more, that there is an automatic $150 million transferred from the LSRA to the general fund. This provision has never been exercised. It's a carryover provision, but I will say in this environment, it is a potential.
Mr. Chairman, that we heard the other day, I think on Sunday, that the projected shortfall for 2016 is now increased or maybe increased by another 15 or 20 million. Is that a fair statement or is that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, in terms of the total revenue collected to date, we are within 1% of the Craig estimate. In fact, the Craig estimate is 1% lower than the revenues collected to date. However, we know that January was a very poor month in terms of natural gas prices and oil prices. And if you extrapolate that out to the next 5 months, it is easily foreseeable that you could have a $20 million plus shortfall in the general fund. That is not an official Craig estimate. It's based on the last months.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If the Senate file that we've discussed just a few minutes ago passes, is Section 313 necessary?
Mr. Chairman, it is, because that budget shortfall measure does not appropriate any contingent funds.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Wasserberger.
So worst case scenario, let's add up all the things that we have that we are taking out of LISRA, all the appropriations, combined with a lower Craig estimate. What is the total amount that we are taking out of LISRA at this point?
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, Senator Wasserberger. I believe that the co-chair came up with about 480. I come up with about 380. No, without school cap. You're right, 480. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
So, Mr. Chairman, a follow-up. And so I believe that we have $1.8 billion in LISRA at this time, and that possibly it might grow because of investments and things like that, $200 million. So if we take the 480, we're looking at $1.5 billion when we come back. Is that a fair assessment?
Mr. Chairman, you could get to that. Of course, those investment incomes are maybe, you know, if we achieve the 2.5%.
It could be less.
Mr. Chairman, that's a possibility. Continuing on, if there aren't any further questions, Section 314 is a continuation of the E-rate excess revenue. This could be codified as well, and we have this on our list. It directs the E-rate funds to the school foundation program account. Section 315, the governor requested this. You approved it. When we looked at it closer, it's not 100% clear why it's necessary. You have the statute currently provides that all computer purchases be made at the direction of the Chief Information Officer's replacement program. This language, I guess, adds standardized pricing, and it also restricts all of your exception requests for computer replacements for only those purposes. So that's essentially the only thing that this Section 315 does. Section 316, and this is one we want to make sure we capture the appropriate intent, provides $17 million appropriation from the Municipal Solid Waste Landfill Remediation Account, and we split that in the same proportion as historically. That proportion is not in statute, but it is based on history. It's been that way for each year that it's been in existence, between the grant account and the loan account, and there is more than $17 million. I believe there's $28 million available in that account to appropriate.
Maybe say that again. I would keep, Mr. Chairman, can we hear that again?
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman. Representative Arshman, the $17 million was the same amount as last year. I believe that was the amount that was adopted by the committee. And then paragraph I and Romanette too little I split that $17 million in the historic proportionate amounts between the grant account, $12.4 million, and the loan account of $4.6 million. I'm looking to staff, but I'm actually pretty convinced that this proportion does not appear in statute.
Mr. Chairman, You're correct. It doesn't. If memory serves me correct, it doesn't, because what happens under in that statute is the awards are given 75% grant, 25% loan. So we've just, when we've appropriated the funds to this account, they've been segregated to so that they can go out in those proportions. So.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, I believe the balance in the account is $28
million. Yes.
How does that account get refreshed?
Mr. Chairman, by appropriation.
Mr. Chairman, It will start to receive, and I can't remember the dollars. I think it starts at $4 million and moves up to $7 million. I think in 2019, from a diversion of lust funds, as that program goes into a maintenance phase. So
are we, Mr. Chairman, I asked Mr. Greer if I could represent Greer. So we're done appropriating this account now. Is that right? We think, and we think that it's going to go on this 20-year lust penny.
Well, I don't know about that, Mr. Chairman.
Mr.
Chairman, I say that as if we turned around, we had excess revenues, that with the ramp up of the cease and transfer component of that program, I'm sure they could move through more money. But, the fact is we don't have those extra revenues.
So, Mr. Chairman, just Representative Greer, so what have we done? And I don't, what have we appropriated this now? It's a pretty big sum. I mean, and the local contribution, the whole bill is like $175 million, isn't it, total, or is it more?
Mr. Chairman, that estimate through the years we worked on all that moved significantly, but I just put $200 million in the back of your mind as the cost to remediate all that.
All right. Yeah. Okay, that's good. I got it. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I think we're ready for Section 317, which provides some additional clarifying language for higher education matching funds that appear in this bill. Again, this section might be ripe for a future bill by the committee or an individual. It actually does very little, but it does provide one requirement that the funds be matched by cash or cash equivalent, and that language is different than what is included in the statute. Section 318 provides for borrowing authority for two programs in the event we have a need to fight wildland fires, $20 million. Subsection B is $24.6 million for employees group health insurance plan. That was increased from last biennium of $22 million. Based on a letter submitted by the Department of Administration and Information. I just bring that to your committee's attention. And then we need to add section or subsection C for this provision, which provides $60 million in borrowing authority for the Department of Transportation because the AML funds that they are receiving are on a reimbursement basis. They had been using state general funds, federal mineral royalties, and severance taxes to fund those operations, maintenance, and surface transportation. So this would provide a $60 million no-interest loan to the extent the department needs cash flow. And candidly, we had intended to include that, and it is not in the legislation.
Okay.
The committee did vote on it. Next, the limitation on salary increases, Section 319. Two important points to note here. You removed the discretionary authority of the governor and the attorney general in the prior session laws, and you added an exemption for the judiciary. So that's the difference on the limitation on salary increases. Community college funding model. This is a direction for the committee to continue their study of that and have a later date of submission for their report. Section 321 corrects, pursuant to a governor's recommendation, $5 million appropriation from last biennium. It was initially provided for one faculty chair in the petroleum engineering program, and they've requested that funds be allowed to be used for up to three faculty positions within that department. Section 322 provides the guarantee or the interfund loan for the statutory reserve amount of $104.55 million from the 1% severance tax account. So we revisited about this morning relative to the guarantee on the SIPA projects. This is a guarantee on the statutory reserve amount. And if, while the language says there any unexpended, unobligated balance, and the fact that this will occur on June 30th, 2018, meaning it'll be last in line, but we could be even more specific to capture the committee's intent to say, to be explicit that this calculation shall occur after any guarantee of SIPA 17 and SIPA 18, just so there's no confusion there.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry. Can I go back to 321? I'm sorry. With this change in this language, this is to – initially that was for an endowed chair. What is it for now?
The support of three faculty positions.
But Mr. Chairman, what does that mean? Support of salaries? So, I mean, these are funds that will go and be spent.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it is subject to the endowment challenge provision.
Okay.
But rather than use it for one, you could potentially use it for multiple positions.
Okay, good.
Mr. Chairman, Section 323, this is the super flex, what I'm referring to, for the governor's office, and it allows movement of funds between series, agencies, programs, and it does require the governor to determine that the standard budget reductions contained in the act would result in an adverse impact to health, welfare, delivery of state services, or a conflict with other law. So, for example, the state treasurer's salary is set by statute. It cannot be reduced by an action within the budget. So he would have to take out that 1.5% on that elected official's salary from some other line item. And this gives, you know, super flex as to where he comes up with that. It might not even be in that agency.
Mr. Vice President.
Mr. Chairman.
So, Don, on that, we've got the super flex here. Here, back a couple pages, we had the limitation on transfers between from 100 to 900. Or was it? Yeah, 100 to 900.
900.
So, how does that work? I mean, they seem to contraindicate one another, or is it just the general and then the specific overrides the general? How does that work?
Mr. Chairman, on line 16, I think we've not withstood the 900 series. So I think this trumps.
Trumps. Okay.
Thank you.
Yes.
I'm going back to
321, that endowment fund. That was appropriated in 2014. Was that meant to match any other endowment, or was that just a standalone $5 million endowment?
It's always been matched.
Mr. Chairman, it was a unique endowment, meaning for a specific purpose, but it was matched 50% public funds, $5 million of state funds, $5 million from a private donation for a total of $10 million.
So it's currently a $10 million fund.
I don't know if all of the match has been received yet, but all this does is change the purposes for which those interest earnings, investment income, can be expended.
Right, from one endowed chair to three positions, but it seems a $10 million endowment would support more than three positions.
Yeah.
unless they're three pretty well compensated positions.
Yeah, we could use that for athletics.
Mr. Chairman?
It's getting late, isn't it?
I'm getting
tired. Oh, my goodness. Mr. Chairman? On section, Mr. Chairman, back to section 323 on the notwithstanding the 308 and that on line 16 on page 97. And let's just think about this a minute. The 308 is put in there to avoid a problem that we're encountering where 900 series were augmenting 100 series funds to give pay raises then that were then rolled into the standard budget that were never granted by the legislature. And so we've, and I mean, it was going on, and now, so if we allow this to trump that, I think it's going to need some more language that, with you know, it can be flexed, but not for this purpose.
You know
what I'm saying? And just I want us to all think about it. We don't need to solve it again tonight, but that's the issue. 308 was fixed, and we don't want to lose that. Very important.
So, Mr. President, I mean, which is you know why I pointed that out is one to make. I wanted to make sure we're aware of that. But the other thing is that there is, in order for Section 323 to trump 308, the governor does have to make the finding, I believe, just having skimmed this, but he does have to make the finding that it's an adverse impact that to not do it or to trump 308, that there would be an adverse impact to health, welfare, delivery of state services. But
you know, I'm not an attorney, but that verse –
Mr. Chairman, it does provide for a review process beginning in subsection B where subsection B provides the same superflex on the school foundation program, and then the review process begins in subsection C where the governor shall report the manner in which he intends to use the superflex by May 1st of this year. It gives a month for management council as designated and designated standing committees as well as this committee to review those and get back to the governor on his proposed use of the flex authority, and then his B11 would document the use of the flex authority. Given what the co-chairman has said, I have already heard of potential uses of this beyond the standard budget reductions. An exception request that was denied by the committee, for example. Could it be used for and there's not much limiting the use of these funds currently, other than that designation or determination that it is adverse to the health, welfare, or delivery of state services or results in a conflict with other law. Section 324, we did attempt in the top of page 99 to define standard budget reduction in subsection G and define that as the final level of appropriation differing from the standard budget. But for example, what would be captured in that would be the global reductions in addition to specific reductions. So hypothetically, could the governor reinstate the reduction to the family literacy program that this committee cut? Probably could, because it would meet the definition of a standard budget reduction. He would have, you know, $36 million to essentially have another bite at the reductions that this committee made.
And Mr. Chair, my question is, have you thought of a little language to fix it?
That he can't cross out?
I still got to be reviewed.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that's exactly correct, and you would have an opportunity to comment on his actions, but your comments would not be binding. I appreciate that. This is trying to capture the committee's intent as being super, meaning extraordinarily broad, but in being extraordinarily broad, perhaps it does result in unintended consequences. Section 324, I won't go through in its entirety, but it's essentially the same designation for the $1.1 million cuts for the judicial branch. And we did say that the Supreme Court makes the calls in consultation with the District Court Budget Committee. That was our attempt to incorporate the divisions. They have essentially the same timeline as provided to the executive branch on page 100. Page 101 is the severance tax distribution. This is the 1% severance tax that is currently being deposited into the Permanent Wyoming Mineral Trust Fund. And you can see in paragraph I that the last two quarterly payments shall go to the general fund, and that's essentially to offset the governor's reduction to the school foundation program reserve account. Paragraph 2 provides that in years fiscal years 17 and 18, the 1% severance tax shall be deposited into the 1% severance tax account. You'll also see that this language is written quite oddly on line 17 through 26. We could have just repealed those sections. In fact, that's normally what we would do, I think. But there are multiple bills that affect this provision, so we did not want to have that conflict, because at the end of the day, we're going to have to reconcile multiple bills that are out there that all revise these two paragraphs.
Okay.
Page 102 redistributes severance taxes that had been going to the highway funds. The highway fund is receiving AML funds, so this committee is intercepting the severance taxes for fiscal years 17 and 18. That is the same concept on pages 102 and 103. It is a deposit of the federal mineral royalties that normally would be deposited in the highway fund and directing them to the general fund. And then finally, page 104 provides for the effective date.
Mr. Chairman,
yo,
I know it's late and retired, but on 323, you know, it seems as if we can tidy up A just a little bit on that authority in terms of, provided, however, you cannot reinstate any programs which have been cut by the legislature. Or provided, cannot reinstate any exception requests denied by the legislature. I mean, I think we can move through and capture a couple of those concerns. And I don't know if we have any more discussion on that, but I am sorry. I've got to have 313 explained to me. Is that, I think it's 313.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greer, very briefly, this is the Craig provision, so.
Yes, 313 on the Craig provision, yeah.
In the event, natural gas prices fall to $1.50 per MCF and remain there, Craig could come back in, say, May and say that the reductions to the revenue forecast are in excess of $150 million, and the $150 million would be released from the LSRA. And I just picked May. That's Craig actually met in May in 2009, I believe.
Okay, so I understand, Mr. Chairman, then if the president's bill goes forward and it's got the austerity measures, how's that reconciled? I mean, just if I were the governor, I would institute this before going through the hassle of the other.
Mr. Chairman, I believe the budget shortfall measures legislation contemplates a contingency fund. How that is triggered, the size of it, is certainly up to the discretion. And then the choice, there's another choice that, candidly, as a member of Craig, it's concerning in that if we meet and it's $125 million, then the governor has to find it in savings. And if we meet and it's $151 million, then he has a million-dollar problem, not a $125 million problem. It does create odd outcomes.
All right. Any further questions? Thank you, Don. That's a good job.
Yeah, good work.
Good work.
You guys always...
All right. Now, we're going to adjourn now.